So hello and welcome back to the Looseheads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union. This is series two, episode two with me, Chris Heal and Rob Shotton, Dave Nicol and Mark Shotton. Join me over the magical universe that is Zoom this afternoon. Guys, how are we doing?
Very good, thank you.
Good, thanks.
Excellent, excellent. And Dave, we've got something a little bit different today, haven't we?
We have indeed. So this week, I'm delighted to say that we are joined by former Premiership winner and now referee, Mr. Carl Dixon. How's it going, Carl?
It's all good. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me on the show. Really appreciate it and looking forward to all your questions.
Pleasure. Thank you for joining us. So I guess let's get straight down to business and get the question answered that everyone's looking for. Just how much self-restraint did it take not to send Danny Kerr off on Monday night?
No self-restraint at all. It was nice and easy. He was a perfect gentleman the whole game. And I think, he knew that before the game. Not to mess with me. No. It was no problems whatsoever. So, and luckily he went off fairly early. But it always helps.
Excellent. And what's it like kind of refereeing your former teammates then?
I guess like people, I think, make a massive deal out of it, you know, hype up, like, you know, is there going to be some sort of bias or non-bias? For me, it's like, you know, when you play the game as well, as soon as the whistle goes, it's business as usual. You're just refereeing a game of rugby and, you know, you're not going to change the way you are or what you do just because, you know a few people a bit better than you know others. I mean, I've played with types people like Billy 12 Trees and Mark Atkinson and people like that from Gloucester. So, and that's across the Premiership. I've played against these guys and with them. So it's no different for me personally.
Obviously, a man of integrity and not something you'd ever actually do, but is there never that temptation, you know, to look back at somebody who might have put a late hit in or given you a little bit of stick and just kind of show them what's what now you're in charge?
Oh, I mean, definitely not. I mean, I don't think I didn't get any late hits because I'd always just pass the ball on before that happened. So. No, definitely not. I just, as I said, you know, integrity there. You just go out and, you know, you don't want anybody ultimately to be talking about the referee. So, you know, for example, Monday night, people were just talking about the rugby, which is fantastic.
And with that as well, Carl, obviously you've been in refereeing for 3 years now, but when you were first asked to referee a Quins game, was there a little bit of trepidation there? Because I guess opposition fans would be straight on your back and trying to criticise you if you did make a decision that might have been a little bit contentious.
Yeah, I mean, I've done Quins I've been on the line for them before in a competitive game and I've refereed them in pre-season. So, yeah, I mean, everybody's going to have their thoughts on things. They're all going to sit there and go, you know, why is this guy 3 years ago, he was playing for him and now he's refereeing. But I think at the end of the day, as you said, we're professional. I expect them to be professional and myself. So, as I said, it's a game of rugby. We're going out there to referee. Am I going to make mistakes? Of course I'm going to make mistakes. And people are going to, you know, say what they want to say. And if they feel that that's the way it is, then I'm not going to change their mind. So ultimately, you've just got to be professional as you can and go out there and do what you do every weekend.
You mentioned a few of the players there, Carl, that you've played with, played against, who know you on that level. So does Danny Kerr, Mike Brown, do they call you sir? Or is there a little bit of a professional, personal element, sort of say?
You know what? I think most players will call me sir, but like in sort of downtime. You know, I had banners before the game come up to me and go, "Oh, Dicko, how you doing? You're all right." So, you know, I on the pitch, like they'll call me sir when they need to, but then in downtime they'll just use my normal name and talk to me quite normally. So, as we said, you know, when the whistle goes, it's business. As soon as the whistle's stopped, and you know, it's, you know, we're waiting for an injury or something happened, it will just be back to sort of normal, having a chat and as you would to anybody. So, which is quite nice, and that's kind of potentially, through playing with these guys, it helps the game along.
How have you found the transition, Carl, from a very top-level player to referee, whereas all the other refs in the English Premiership, they're obviously ex-players, but they're career referees as well. You've been a career professional rugby player. 3 years later, you're in that pack of referees. It can't have been an easy transition.
Well, obviously being a nine, you know, we did referee quite a few games anyway from the position, which helped. But no, I mean, obviously it helps being part of the game and that game understanding and all the rest of it. And, you know, the other guys, but you're always going to get differentials. Like, you know, look at Wayne Barnes, never really played the game, but he's one of the best referees in the world. So yeah. I think it's about, you know, how you adapt to each game, each competition that you're in. Can you do that? obviously, ultimately, the players, it doesn't matter who you are, what you've done, they want the right outcome. So, you know, they can be friendly and friendly before the game.
Yeah.
The game kicks off, if things aren't going their way and the decisions are wrong, then it doesn't matter if you've played 100 times for England and, you know, and refereed 100 times. It's all about getting the right decision. So it was difficult to start with. I found the hardest part of moving that transition, it was my positioning, because I was so used to running to that ruck and then kind of running around. Now it's almost, do I need to go there? Do I change? And then the second hardest bit, which is, I think people kind of are astounded by, is the fact that just the admin side of things, we're so used to being sort of, as a player, turn up at 8:30 with your boots.
Yeah.
And that's it. Everyone else does it for you.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's, you know, you're head of a sort of captain of the team. You're telling people what to wear, where to be, what to do. And, you know, at the start, that was kind of difficult for me and it took me a little bit of time to get used to. So, you know, these are the things why, you know, when you move into new jobs and any sort of thing, is there's always going to be a new challenge and you're just going to try and adapt to that situation.
Yeah. I watched the game on Tuesday, Monday night, and in preparation for this, I'd watch it anyway. And the question drifted into my head. It was a weird game, weird first half, in that Gloucester almost did a couple of things wrong and found themselves 17 points down. Do you as a ref ever think, this game's a bit weird and it's because of me? Or do you think, no, it's up to the players. They've got the ball.
I think at the end of the day, like I was saying before, we at the end of the game, if everyone's talking about the rugby and not talking about us, we've done a great job.
Yeah.
Because if they're talking about you, there's something going on. So, you know, at the end of that game, you're looking, whatever the score finished, 28-16 or whatever it was, it comes down to everybody goes, well, Quins deserve to win that because of X, Y, and Z, or Gloucester deserve to lose that because of X, Y, and Z, whatever it is. But they're not talking about me, which is great. They're just talking about the rugby. And, you know, when you watch the game back on our review and you listen to the commentary team, again, they don't mention your name unless, you know, for some reason we're talking about caterpillar rucks, which always seems to come up. So apart from that, you know, you've had a great day. So,
Yeah, we were talking about this yesterday, Carl, about these elements of the game that are a little bit frustrating. And I guess for you as a referee, when you're shouting, use it a million times, you've been on both sides of the fence on that one. Is that one of the most frustrating things for you?
No, it's not frustrating for me because, you know, we're just, you obviously call and use it. I think what people sometimes don't quite understand is, you know, they see the ball there, but we can't call use it till the ball's available. And I think what happened on one night, we went for an unplayable because the ball was in the middle and they're going back and forward. So I can't say use it. But what they see is they think, can we say use it earlier? Then they roll it back with their foot and by the time. But when you actually look at it, a lot of the times, you know, they're 5 seconds from when you say use it. And they do actually use it probably between 5 and 7 seconds. So it's not frustrating. I think it's more frustrating for the supporters than it is for us. For us, it's just a case of, well, this is the way the game is and this is what we're expected to do. So, you know, we can't really change that.
Yeah, and you mentioned there kind of sort of people talking about the game rather than the referee, Carl, and you're one of the braver referees. You're on Twitter, obviously, from your playing days and stuff like that. And I saw Barnsley is back on Twitter now.
Back.
Do you ever sort of look at what people are potentially saying about you after the game, or you kind of think, well, I know I've done a good job. No one else is talking about it. Let's try and shut that out.
I mean, social media now, everybody has access to it, so everybody is accessible, no matter who you are. You know, as you said, Barnsley's back on there, so people can say what they want. And ultimately, people, no matter if you have a good game, a bad game, or whatever, people are going to have their thoughts on you. And, you know, obviously, I see some of them because I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram, etc. So, but everyone has their right to their opinion and whatever they think. And, you know, when people sort of say things about refereeing or even about the players, I'd almost say to them, well, listen, go and have a go. And have a go and see, see what you think. See if it is as easy as you think or as hard as you think. And, you know, give it a go. We always need more referees. You always need more players. So it's worth it. And, you know, it's very easy sitting there, you know, in your home and watching a game going, well, this should be this, this should be that. But go and give it a go. And then, you know, you might get a different perspective on things.
Yeah, I've seen, I think it's Wayne's wife has been probably his most biggest critic so far about not bringing the shopping in.
Yeah.
Polly does like to, you know, have a say in certain things. So, you know, fair play to her.
And kind of just on that as well, Carl, because you were a player and you've been in the refereeing game for 3 years now, do you think people may see it yourself potentially, I don't know, as a maybe an easy target because you are less experienced in brackets? Or do you think that maybe helps you in a way because you kind of understand the ever-changing game that is rugby union at the moment a little bit more?
I think it's the pros and cons of anything. I think, you know, the pros, obviously, I've been there and these guys know me on a personal level. So they can talk to me. And my biggest thing I would say is I talk to them in a way that and they can talk to me in a way that kind of respect sort of thing. So there's no shouting and screaming. And you talk to each other how you want to be spoken to. That always helps. Obviously, there's going to be the cons on the side, particularly when you go to Europe. But a lot of these people have no idea who I am. So ultimately, they're just, this guy turns up and, you know, who is he? Oh, yeah, he might have played a little bit, but I don't know him. So then you don't have that same relationship. So there's pros and cons to, you know, all of that. But as I said before, ultimately, players just want you to get the right decision. You know, when a nine says to me, come on, it's a bit slow. And I go, yeah, it might be, but I just didn't see it like that. Or, you know, that was knocked on. Yeah, it might have been. I just didn't see it. If I don't see it, I can't referee it. I apologise. And ultimately, you know, we're not, as referees and players, both are going to make mistakes. We're never going to get everything right. So, and that's kind of sort of how I would deal with it and talk.
Do you think it helps make you maybe a bit more sympathetic towards the players, having been there and done it yourself?
I think when I first started, one of my biggest, not necessarily criticisms, was you're a referee now, not a player. So as a player going into the referee, I'd be like, oh, that's okay. Oh, that's all right. Because I was that player mentality of, well, yeah, be okay, let's move on. Mm-hmm. Whereas you need to sort of move over towards the referee side and go, well, actually, I've got to referee that. I can't just let it become, you know, a pile-up or whatever. You know, my sort of philosophy at the start was, well, if the ball's there, let's just go, whereas sometimes that might not be the case. So it's adapting, and that's kind of been my biggest sort of learning sort of curve going from finishing, was learning how to go from player and not lose that player mentality, because that's kind of one of your attributes, but move more towards the refereeing side of things and be a bit more disciplined and, you know, put your authority or set up the game as you'd like.
Did the 22-year-old Carl Dixon know that he was going to be a ref?
Oh, the 22, it definitely. If you asked me, like, probably even 4 years before I retired, would I be a referee? I was like, well, come on, there's no way, because, you know, as I said, I wasn't probably the easiest person to deal with on the pitch, so I never thought I'd have the be able to take the potential criticism that comes with becoming a referee. So, no, definitely not. Yeah.
Would you have found it difficult to referee yourself, do you think?
Yeah. I had a situation like a while ago, and I don't know if we'll cover it a little later. As I was coming through the leagues, I kind of was refereeing it was a level 5 game. And basically, you have no ARs at that level, and I could drive and more going forward, it's collapsed. You're like, well, I don't know who's brought it down. I can't really guess. And something else happens next and I end the game. And two of these players come flying towards me and just start basically telling me what they think. And I kind of reverted back to my player mentality and said a few things I probably shouldn't have said over a mic with an assessor. And I instantly regretted it. And from that day, I kind of learned the lesson. Whereas, listen, people are going to be frustrated. I know I was frustrated as a player, and as a referee, you've just got to almost go, listen, okay, I appreciate that. However, X, Y, Z, and you kind of have that sort of calm demeanor with yourself, because you just can't lose it. You know, as a player, you probably could lose it a little bit more. You've got people around you to calm you down or take you away. As a referee, you have nobody, you're there. And the last thing you want to do is on TV, you know, is potentially have, you know, the biggest conversation piece after the game is, you know, referee and player have bust up. So, you know, yeah, you don't want to get there.
Do you ever get, I guess in football they call it banter, but do you ever get between you, the ARs and the TMO, do you ever get anything like, Carl, just yellow card him, he's being a pain in the arse, you've missed him 3 times, just do him.
you probably wouldn't get that because then, you know, everything is recorded from literally, as soon as the mic's turned on to the end of the game. So, you know, commentary may not pick it up, but all these games go to the directors of rugby, the coaches, and all it has on there is no crowd noise, the ref's mic, the AR's mic and the TMO. So they can hear everything. So you might have a little, in downtime, you might have a bit of banter, not necessarily, you know, about the game, like, come on, Dicko, keep up with play, you know, whatever it is, but nothing probably talking about, like, you know, penalty decisions or yellow cards or stuff. Yeah. Because,
again, Danny Kerr, get him off.
Yeah, something like that. You know, it might not go down so well. You know, you try and be as professional as you can with, obviously, you know, we're human. We want to have a bit of fun out there as well.
Quite funny you say that, because I was listening to the Peter Crouch podcast the other day with Mike Dean, which is really interesting to get an insight into what life is like with a ref. And one thing they asked him was whether the refs and the linesmen, touch judges, fourth officials speak to each other about something that's completely irrelevant. And they sometimes do. So is there anything that you talk about that's completely irrelevant to the match?
Yeah, I mean, you at half before the game, you know, you want to keep it as relaxed as possible. You want to enjoy yourself. You know, we're lucky that sometimes when we go away on European trips, we get to spend 3 days with the same people. So, yeah, it might be a case of, you know, especially with these water breaks now, you come in 20 minutes. Is there anything? No, nothing major. You know, oh, well, we've got 60 minutes left. And you might just start talking about, you know, oh, wow, the crowd are pretty noisy today, or, you know, whatever it is. It just flows into a normal conversation. And I kind of feel that that's kind of the relationship you want. You want to be able to just be able to talk as if you were sat at home having a chat with each other, rather than it's almost, well, this is work, pressure. It's all about being able to sort of have that 1 or 2 minutes just to sort of take time off and relax, you know. You know, do you need water? Yeah, I really do need water. There's a lot of running going around here. So It's just a little bit of fun. And, you know, we want to enjoy it as much as the players enjoy it.
I have been struck by for a couple of years, the calmness that the quartet who are officiating the game, led by the referee himself in the middle, they just conduct themselves with real calm. Whereas players are often emotional beasts and it's really hard to conduct themselves with calm. But you, yeah, I mean, really calm.
It's difficult. I mean, you want to be calm because obviously, you know, in any situation, the calmer you are, the clearer the way you think, you know, you're not worrying about X, Y, and Z. Whereas I guess as a player, you sit there, there's 14 other people depending on you. Yeah. Sometimes the game can get a bit scrappy. You've got people talking to you, you know, your 10 might be saying something, your 15 might be saying something. So emotions can get up, whereas there's no one really talking to me as a referee. You're in there, you're refereeing, no one's shouting at me, no one's talking to me. You just have those clear thoughts, stay calm and kind of run around. If the ARs do come in at any point, normally it's with, you know, clear, concise communicate, like, you know, I'll high tackle penalty only. Well, okay, thank you very much, advantage, and we move on. Whereas, you know, as a player, you've got a lot of people talking to you, shouting at you. Some people can take it the wrong way. There's a lot of pressure there, and it's sometimes very difficult to, you know, compute. You know, if you've got a 9-15 shouting you to go one way and the 10 shouting you to the other way, and you go with a 15, with a 10, you're like, what are you doing? And sometimes, you know, the emotions can get quite high, but as a referee, you don't kind of have that. And, you know, we have that calmer manner, demeanor to have those clearer thoughts. And particularly when the big decisions come up, when they go on the screen, you don't want to be sitting there, you know, panicking or, you know, talking really fast or anything. It's about just taking your time and getting the right decision which for the game.
One thing I'm really interested in, Carl, is hearing what does a week in the life of a referee look like? A lot of fans probably think that you turn up, you ref the game, you go home and that's it. Obviously, there's a lot more to it than that. You know, you've got to stay fit. You've got to analyse the games. You probably have to, know who the gobby ones are. But how does a week look for you?
So, not a normal week, apart from obviously during this sort of COVID time with games thick and fast, is we'll kind of, if you take it from a Monday, so Sunday will normally be your day off if you're not refereeing. So, it's for your time for your family or whatever's going on. And then Monday, you're in at Twickenham. Normally, we have fitness and conditioning in the morning with weights, lunch, and then we're reviewing our game. Normally, we've already watched the game once before that time, and we'll have our own little timeline where we'll go through the whole game and look at decisions, and then we'll go through that game on a Monday afternoon with our assessors and look at everything and discuss what we think, because obviously with rugby, some areas are grey, and find out what the best sort of decision was. Was I right? Was I wrong? Could I have done something different? And then you're looking at a group session with all the referees together, looking at any of the big sort of trends that have come up from the weekend and what we're looking at. And that kind of finishes Monday. Tuesday morning, everyone will have brought a couple of clips from their games and give her a kind of rundown of how the game went with, you know, your scrum, lineup, offsides, etc. A couple of clips that might be discussed. So it might be a red card in the game or a yellow card or a penalty decision. What do you think about this? Do you think I was right? Is there a different decision? Could we have done something different and get the referee perspective so we're all kind of consistent in what we're doing? Yeah. Then we're going away again for some more conditioning and weights. And then Tuesday afternoon, we kind of do sort of a final sort of shutdown review of the whole sort of weekend and kind of move on to the next week. Then Wednesday, you'll again probably have a day off from fitness. You'll be starting your preview for the next week, contacting all your teams, sending emails out, looking at the players, the games that have happened previous. Thursday, you might go back into a little bit of fitness, and then you might have a conference call with your team before you get to the game to discuss everything, particularly with your TMO, because sometimes we work with different TMOs. And then Friday, potentially, you could be refereeing, or it's kind of a day just to sort of sit, relax for the game on the Saturday or the Friday evening. And then we all start again.
You talked there about you discuss your decisions and your red cards and your yellow cards. Are there many disagreements between the refs?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say there's loads of sort of differentials in what people think. You know, you know, people talk about this, you know, was it orange? Is it the orange situation? So is it red? Is it yellow? Yeah, you could go red. Yeah, you could go yellow. And sometimes we always use this phrase, well, make sure your words match what you're describing.
Yeah.
So if the words match the picture, you should come with the right outcome. Obviously, and you know, you hear Barnsley say a lot, you know, facts, facts, facts. If you get the facts right, well then shouldn't you should be able to get the, what you might disagree on is, we might have a disagreement on the facts, where, you know, I might say it's a passive tackle, where someone else might think it's an offensive tackle, or someone might think it's direct contact, someone else might think it's gone up. So there's always going to be that sort of human factor, as we discussed before, that, you know, whatever it is. So, you know, there might be certain discrepancies, but normally they're not too difficult. And, you know, I think we had one breakdown last year. I can't remember the game. And genuinely, I think there's about four or five different decisions you could have made. So that kind of sort of makes how sometimes it's quite difficult at the breakdown, sometimes with what you can have. And you could take a number of different options. It's what's the best normally for the game is what you want to go with.
I'm really interested, Carl, about, you know, that thing you said earlier with the DORs of the clubs who we love and we take into our hearts, you know, the Diamonds and the Gustards of this world. Do they ever come to you and say, is there a forum for that? Do they come and say, look, that game we lost, but let's forget that. But I thought in minute 7 or minute 25, that was a bit wrong or whatever it is.
So not what you normally have is if they have any sort of issues or praise or whatever it is, they'll normally go through Tony Spreadbury, who's the boss.
Right.
And then they'll go through him and it'll kind of sort of dilute down to us. But before COVID hit, after the game, you'd go into the bar where you're having your dinner and you'd speak to both coaches.
Yeah, that's still alive and true, is it? Because that's been the amateur game forever.
And people might say, oh, well, they might have go, well, listen, you know, I thought, oh, that might have been a tough decision. I go, listen, you know what? I'll have a look at it on review, and then we can have a discussion. There's no issues with that because, you know, ultimately you get 1-2 seconds to look at something.
Yeah.
And as we said, you're not going to get every single decision right. So it's about, you know, we want to get the big decisions right. Yes, we want to get every single decision correct. Ultimately, that's not going to be, you know, if you come off again, there's no way anybody in the world is going to have the perfect game.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's definitely a forum for that and the discussion. And it's great. You can talk to these guys and, you know, a lot of them are really knowledgeable and, you know, they can give you their feedback. So particularly, you know, when we actually get guys to come into our review sessions and actually, you know, Neil Hatley used to come in and just give us some feedback on what they think and how we can move forward and improve, because ultimately, as a group, we want to improve and be the best, you know, the best referees we can be. And these guys are at the forefront of the game.
Yeah, and I know Twitter isn't kind of the best form at times, Carl. But I saw, obviously, you were over in Japan for the World Cup, and there was a decision, I think it was made into a TikTok, or it was made into a short video. I think it was Wales, Australia, that's right. And you kind of explained your decision on Twitter. So, because I know people were probably asking about it because it's such a big game, Wales, Australia, anyway. So did you take it upon yourself to just explain why it was not in touch, whatever it was?
I think a lot of people ask the question. I think with certain things in rugby, and a lot of the laws, and you know, a lot of people saying they're changing, and sometimes, and I did the same when I did my referees course, coming from playing to referee, some of the laws I was like, oh wow, I had no idea about that. So I think sometimes people just want the law to be explained to them, because they can go, oh okay, that makes sense now. You know, with a touch law, sometimes it can be a little bit confusing, the fact that everyone just assumed it used to be, well, if the ball has gone over the side, well, it's out. And that's not necessarily the case. So people ask you the question, can you explain it? And you're more than happy to, you know, go on there, explain it to them, and call it helping other people understand the game of rugby. So the next time it happens, more people go, yep, that makes more sense, I understand now. So, you know, it's a no-brainer for us to go out there and explain our decisions, in the sense of we don't want to sit there and explain every single one. But, you know, for unique situations like that, I think it helps the game understanding for the wider public.
The question's often phrased in reverse, but do you think rugby at large could learn anything from football?
It's a very interesting question. And we work quite closely with the football referees, in the sense of we go to their, I've been to their conferences before, you know, at the start of the season, I go to their conference and listen to what they're talking about. I think it's so different. I mean, obviously you've got VAR that they use, which is different to our sort of TMO system. The way they run it, personally, I prefer our sort of way. But you know, there's pros and cons to every system. So I wouldn't necessarily say there's anything we can learn from football. But I think there's ways that they can learn from us, and we can learn from them in not necessarily the game, but you know, fitness strategies, previewing, reviewing. How we, you know, manage teams and stuff like that. So there's always going to be a learning aspect to it, but the games are so different in terms of how it's refereed, I think it'd be very difficult.
Yeah. What's your personal view on the abuse that football refs get?
Again, it's one of these things where, I mean, should referees get abused? Absolutely not. Yeah. But, you know, we don't actually hear loads of it, so we don't actually know what's being said, what's going on. I guess that's something, you know, the guys in the sort of the upper echelons of the football sort of management would discuss, and what's the right way to deal with it. I don't know. We have our way of dealing with it in the Gallagher Premiership, and it works, and you don't get much sort of values issues in our game, which is great. So, you know, how would I deal with it? That's, you know, I don't think that's for me to say how I deal with it, because I'm not in there doing what they do.
Yeah, and that's one of the things as well, Carl, really, that you do get, you know, players and officials from time to time do get, you know, a lot of criticism. So is it important to have that sort of support network and even that sort of group of people that you can talk to about dealing with situations that might be a bit tough for you to deal with on your own?
Yeah, I think, like, you know, the best thing to do is talk about things. You know, you might not be comfortable talking about them. You might think, well, it might make me look weak or whatever, but you want to have that support network around you, you know, whether that's your work colleagues or your family or friends. And I think just having that chat with them, it kind of gets it off your mind. You can see other people's views, you know, whether you agree with them views or not might be different, but at least you've expressed it. And I think it just helps, because if you sort of internalize it, then it just plays on your mind. And ultimately is going to affect your performance on the field, or just affect your performance in your day-to-day life. So I do really agree that it's better to get it out than keep it in. And sometimes that is difficult, but ultimately I think it helps you move on as an individual.
Yeah, of course, obviously with the Loose Heads podcast, and the core reason behind why we do the podcast, and Dave, Rob and Mark work so hard with the foundation, is to promote awareness for mental health and use rugby as a platform to do so, Carl. And I mean, no disrespect by this, but you've obviously been in the game, played the game for a while, now officiating for 3 or more years. Have you maybe seen a shift about people in the game starting to talk about sort of the struggles they've had? Because you can be have the stereotypical view of rugby's a macho sport, everyone wants to bottle up the feelings and show the big and tough, but we are starting to see a shift, we think. I don't know whether you feel the same.
Yeah, I mean, definitely you see it more and more now with people, and particularly on Twitter with the articles that are coming out. And I think what people don't kind of appreciate from the outside looking in, I mean, well, as a rugby player, it's a fantastic job. Like, you can't deny it. Like, you're with friends every day. You're doing something you love. You know, the camaraderie and the atmosphere is fantastic. And when that kind of finishes, it's kind of, well, what's the next thing? What's the next step of, you know, my journey? And you go from that environment where, you know, you're potentially working, you know, a 9 to 1 day or 8 to 12, whatever it is. And then you might have to kind of go into an office where the atmosphere is completely changed. You know, you're doing that 9 to 5. It's a real shock to the system. And I don't think people can sometimes quite comprehend how difficult that is. And, you know, I think people do struggle. And you do mentally think to yourself, oh, wow, I'm kind of missing this. Do I want to go back to it and try and do it? And I had a friend in, for example, just in Hong Kong who tried, he played as, he was a player for a bit. He tried to referee. He didn't really like it. He missed being part of that team. And then he went back to playing, but on a lower level, just to stay in it. So I think it is definitely tough when you leave that kind of environment. And it's so important to go and find something else that you can enjoy, speak to people about it, because you'll find that a lot of people, especially coming from rugby, your friends are in the same boat. And it's just important just to get that out. And you know, you think to yourself, oh, actually, I'm not alone. I'm actually with other people in the same boat. And you can kind of talk about it and move on together and potentially have that sort of common goal after you finish.
Because I know you've mentioned, Carl, when you've done interviews about going into refereeing, that it's so important to plan for after playing the game. So I know you were sort of inspired, was it, by Will Skinner to potentially get into refereeing? But was there a part of you towards your end of your time with Quins thinking, I do want to stay in the game and I might not go into punditry, which some of your former colleagues have done. I might not go down the coaching route, but I do want to stay in the game some way. So were you trying to do everything you possibly could at that stage to try and stay in the game after you did hang up the playing boots?
So I was looking at sort of going into teaching. Like, I'd done my sort of PGC while I was at university and stuff. So I had something potentially to go into. And it, honestly, like when Will mentioned it, I hadn't even come into my head to do it. And then I just thought, well, do you know what? I'd love to give this a go, and did it and thoroughly enjoyed it. And I just thought, okay, this could maybe be a real sort of path for me to move into refereeing full time. And when I did finally retire, I still had the option to carry on playing. I still had a contract offer on the table. And I just made the conscious decision that probably this was the good time to move on. Do I miss being part of that team and that atmosphere? Of course you do. You know, I'd be lying if I said I didn't, because, you know, you're with 40 other blokes every other day, you know, hanging out with your friends and stuff and enjoying it. Going into refereeing, which, again, we get to spend some time together, but everybody lives different parts of the country. We spend, you know, maybe a couple of days a week together sometimes. So it's not quite the same, but again, as we mentioned before, it's about finding that support network. I have referees who live near me. I have friends outside. I have hobbies that I do outside of refereeing, which keep my mind sort of occupied. And you get to chat to people. You know, I play golf, so we get to chat from people from all walks of life and what they're doing. So, yeah, it's, you know, yeah, I missed it. But ultimately, it was probably one of the best decisions I ever made for my career. And, you know, it sort of highlighted in what happened last year.
So when you were, you know, sat there and the phone call or whatever came through when you were asked this was going to be your first match as a referee, and I think it's Saracens, Gloucester, right, and saying it at King's Home Friday night in front of a shed on BT Sport, was there kind of a bit of nerves for you, because obviously you come from playing and, you know, you didn't really know what to expect from the officiating side of the fence, if you like?
Oh, I mean, massively. I kind of expected to come into the referee, and I thought, do you know what, I might get a Premiership game towards the end of the first season just to ease me in, like, you know.
Was it 3 months, Carl, when you decided to be a ref or something like that?
November, yeah. So it was like 4 months. I think I joined in July. Obviously, we didn't start refereeing until August, pre-season. So it was pretty short, and I remember just coming in and I was speaking to our admin lady, and she was like, well, yeah, you've got a game this, you know, in 3 weeks' time, it's going to be your first Premiership game. I was like, okay, you know, I love a challenge, love to get in there, like to get involved. And I was like, oh, it's going to be Gloucester. I was like, oh, wow. So Shed, that'll be interesting. You know, I've played there a few times and it's not for the light-hearted. They like to get stuck into you. So it's Gloucester Saracens. I was like, okay, that'll be a good game. And they were like, yeah, you're Friday night on BT Sport. I was like, wow. I was like, it just kind of moved on. I was like, well, this is going to be interesting. My first ever game of, you know, Premiership rugby, and I'm on a Friday night slot. There's no other games for other people to go and watch. They're going to be watching that in front of the Shed. So, yeah, I mean, I was really nervous. You know, even at the game, just before the game, I was really nervous. You're like, it's kind of your second sort of coming in the Premiership. As soon as the whistle goes, you kind of just forget about it and you just kind of get on with the job and hopefully you don't mess up that game too much. So, and I was quite lucky that it went okay. And I think on the day I got a home win, which is always a bonus down in Gloucester.
Is that one of the sort of toughest grounds to referee at, Carl? I'm going to put you on the spot. A few quick fire questions, which you can answer or politely decline. But is it one of those, you know, those tight old stadiums like your King's Homes, like your Welford Road? So are those maybe the tougher referee?
I wouldn't say that any game was like a tough stadium. You know, like Gloucester, Leicester, you know, even Northampton. The crowd are just amazing, whether they're pro or con you, whatever it is. But I love that atmosphere. You know, you want it to be, you know, that's big part of the game. You know, when you're a player, you love playing on the biggest stages to be, you know, that kind of atmosphere. So I wouldn't say they were tough. I'd just say, you know, they're probably the more vocal crowds, which I think really makes the game. And, you know, even there with 1,000 fans on Monday, it was, you know, you could still hear them. You know, you might be able to hear them a little bit better. And exactly what they're saying. But yeah, I just think it makes it a great game of rugby.
Has that been strange for you though, Carl, when you've come back since the resumption of the Gallagher Premiership? I'm not sure how many games you refereed off the top of my head, but when you have referee games and there's been zero crowd there, it's just you, your team, the two sets of the teams and their medical staff or whatever. Has that been a really strange experience, refereeing no crowd?
Yeah, it's been really strange. I guess the weirdest thing is when you're at the game, you make a decision and normally you get that crowd reaction or, you know, a box kick might take longer than you thought and you get that crowd reaction, whereas you don't get anything. So you're just kind of like, oh, okay. And I know in certain games you get to sort of the sort of 60, 70 minutes and there might be a one score game and you don't kind of get that feeling of the game because there is no crowd giving you that kind of, you know, atmosphere, and you've got to really, really focus. And what's really good for us is, you know, not like I know the commentators aren't massive fans and of these 20 and 60 minute water breaks, is it gives us that kind of place just to sort of go, right, let's refocus again now, let's refocus and move on to the sort of the final 20 minutes or the next 20 minutes, which I think is really good. But yeah, it is a little strange, and you know, obviously, we can't wait to get crowds back.
And what we've been able to pick up on the microphone a lot more because there's no crowds there, Carl, is your discussions with you and your players, the players on the pitch. I mean, is there any, you probably won't be able to name names, but I'm going to ask you anyway, any sort of challenging players that you've come across or you have to deal with a little bit differently, or because you were a nine and you said it yourself that, you did challenge referees at times. Is it kind of what you've come to expect?
I don't think I challenged referees. I just gave them my opinion on what I thought of a situation.
Much better way of playing it.
I've never challenged them. Listen, at the end of the day, like, you know, again, I won't name names or go into that sort of thing. But as we said before, emotions can run high sometimes. You know, there's big games. Every point matters. You know, players are playing for contracts, you know, starting positions, etc. So players are going to get, you know, emotional at certain times. And, you know, as I mentioned, like when they do, it's about just being able to talk to them in a way which kind of they can sort of go, okay. And it makes it real simple when you have that nice sort of calm conversation with them. And a lot of them will just, you know, go, yeah, okay, I can't really argue with that. Mm-hmm. You know, you can say, listen, sorry, I just didn't see it. As we mentioned, they can go, they can still be angry internally, but they kind of go, well, I can't really say too much about that. So, yeah, it's about just a way of dealing with players. And, you know, as I said, you want them to, you talk to them in a nice way, you hopefully should get that in a sort of nice manner back towards you.
Players out there at the moment you think would make good referees?
I think there's probably plenty out there. I think the biggest sort of thing that I kind of felt was kind of maybe a little bit more difficult for me was the fact that, you know, there are a lot of opinions out there. So it's how you deal with those opinions. You know, you mentioned social media, you know, crowds, you mentioned players, you know, whatever it is. Certain people are going to have their opinions. Now, it's how you can deal with those opinions. Now, you could either take it one way and that might, you know, certain people might find that very difficult. So, and other people get it and just sort of go, thank you, I really appreciate that, and move on. You know, so it, I think there would be a lot of players who could be very good referees. You know, you see Nick Wood does it, Richard Horton does it. So these guys, you know, all involved. It's just whether, you know, do people consider referee as a career path? I'm not sure. But that's what we're trying to drive. And you see it more in the world. You know, you've got quite a few ex-players now who are international referees with the likes of Nick Berry, Frank Murphy, Mike Adamson, and guys like that.
So to maybe just flip that question a little bit, Carl, obviously you're part of the referees union now. Which positions would your fellow Gallagher Premiership referees, or where would they play on the pitch?
Well, if you saw a touch session between all the referees, you'd know that none of us would be playing anywhere.
Not even you.
Well, maybe I'd make number 21 on the watt bike warming up. Yeah, we wouldn't be playing any positions whatsoever. You know, we're quite lucky. We always have Barnsley's charity rugby day most year down at Yazzet Lydney. And I think a few of the boys get involved in play, which is a bit of fun. But, you know, I think we'd struggle to play in any proper team, I can tell you that.
Matthew Carley could do a job in a back row, couldn't he?
I'm sure he could do a job, but until the contact part of the game come in, then we might be struggling, you know.
Well, what was it like for you, Carl, then, going into kind of the referees union, if you like? Because I'm not sure, I guess a few of them were referee when you were playing. So yeah. Was there a bit of apprehension there at all? Or was it, right, let's hope they've forgotten a few things that might have been said or might not have been said in the past?
I think the final sort of year, maybe year and a half before I joined it, I kind of was like, do you know what? I think I'm going to change my attitude just a little bit here, because even my colleagues. So rather than as we sort of giving my opinion, I'd just ask them questions. I'd be like, oh, okay. Does he not have to roll away? Or does he have to release there? Or whatever it is. Just ask him a polite question. But normally after about 25 minutes, they just went, okay, that's enough. And I'd be like, okay, thank you. And just move on. It was always a bit of fun. But no, when I kind of went in, they all kind of welcomed me, which was quite nice. But that was maybe because I was nicer to them for the final year.
Sharon, you were a good student, Carl. Yeah. When you're and kind of what's, again, because people from the outside who just watch the 80 minutes of rugby, Carl, probably just see you guys as the referees. But I guess you do build up those relationships. I mean, what's it like being part of that referees union? I guess you all get on, you do your social days like that. What's it kind of like being part of?
Yeah, no, it's really good. I mean, when we're all together, it's just like, it is kind of like being back at when you were playing. Everyone has a bit of fun. You know, you're working out together, you know, you're in the reviews and stuff all sort of together. And as I mentioned, when you go down to games, you'll meet everybody up for like dinner or lunch, have a, you know, social conversation. When we go on these European trips, we spend 2 or 3 days together. We have Christmas parties. We try and have a social when we can. So you get to know the guys really well. And then obviously when you go on these, you know, we're lucky enough to go on these world rugby trips. You know, for example, last year I was around the world with Matt Carley, we kind of travelled together. So you build up these, you know, really close sort of friendships with guys, because you're spending, you know, a week at a time with them over a short period of time. So it's, you know, it's really good, and we always have a good laugh, which is nice. And you know, when someone comes in from the weekend and might not have done quite as well as they should have done, it's always a bit of fun.
Mm-hmm. Who's the big? Who can last the longest on a night out of all the refs?
I think we all do pretty well. I'd say, you know, if I was talking about the one who goes, Christoph Ridley, he's the one who's always in bed early. He's always in bed early. Barnsley will always be out there, but he might not be awake. So, but he's always there.
I was going to say, because you've described Barnsley as a coach for you, Carl. I hope that doesn't go on to the social side of it as well.
No, definitely not on the social side of things. Definitely not. He's a... I think I'm all right there. I don't need coaching on the night out sort of side of things. Definitely not from Barnsley.
And just in terms of your experience, Carl, in terms of building yourself up to where you are now, obviously you've had a brilliant Premiership career, and I know you've spoken so fondly about your time with Harlequins, and winning the Premiership is probably the pinnacle for most players. But for you, going into the officiating, I know you went through the levels of international leagues and stuff like that. How beneficial was that experience? Because I guess you are watching people like Wayne at the top of his game in the Premiership, and you're thinking, that's where I want to be, but I know I've got to do this groundwork first.
Yeah, I mean, it's massively beneficial coming from someone who's never refereed the game at sort of that level. I guess with this, it's all about on-the-job learning. You can do a course and you know the laws and all the rest of it. But until you've been in that situation, you're kind of learning new things every single game. So, that, you know, from an under-16 game to a Premiership game, there's going to be a different challenge in there. And there's certain situations you're going to be put in that you've never been put in before. So you're learning all the time, and you know it's great. This is, you know, when you watch the other guys referee and you watch rugby and you will review with them on everything, you see the situation they've been put in and you go, oh, okay. So if I was in that situation, I kind of know how to deal with that. You know, and I think it's so beneficial coming through, building up those pictures. You know, obviously as a nine, you built up a lot of breakdown pictures, but you know, I didn't look at a line out. I didn't stand at the back of the line out and watch a line out. I didn't, you know, I put the ball into a scrum and then ran to the back. I didn't see what happened the rest of the part of the scrum. So you're building all these pictures up, all these experiences up. So when you are moving up and going through, you can use these experiences to your benefit. And ultimately, when you get to where Barnes and people are at, they've done so many games, it becomes second nature. But everyone's still learning. Every game, you can learn something.
You mentioned the scrum there as both a nine and a referee. Do you have a clue what's going on in the front half the time?
Of course we do. Of course we do. As a referee, as a nine, no. You kind of point and go, someone's doing something. But as a referee, of course we do. We look at it, we discuss it, we talk about good pictures, and we know exactly what's going on.
We're gonna have to get the video online of this now, because Carl looks very convincing when he says that.
Yeah, as someone who's played in the front row more times than they care to mention, I still don't have a clue what's going on half the time. So, much better man than me.
I think it's like anything, you know, when you have guys that have been in the scrum, they'll know more than someone who hasn't been in the scrum. It's like, you know, you say, you know, to any sort of non-player, we'll go and pass a rugby ball as a scrum half done. But if you've never done it, obviously, it's, you know, you'll find it difficult until you get to a situation where you practice. And again, the same with refereeing. You know, you've never refereed a scrum before, but then once you've refereed 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, you build up those pictures in your head and you get a better understanding of what you're looking for.
I guess kind of alongside probably kind of the timing at the rucks, one of the other criticisms in rugby at the moment is sort of seeing scrums collapsing, resetting, and the amount of time it kind of takes. Is there something you think that can be done to help that, or is that just part of the game?
I think it's a difficult sort of question to sort of answer, because ultimately, you know, you can sit there and you can ask people to do one thing, but then you've got to get 16 people cooperating with you, and, you know, cooperating with yourself. It's a competition. You know, people want to win that competition. So it's very difficult. You know, people have mentioned stopping the clock, starting the clock. But then do you get a situation where it's no longer rugby, this aerobic sport, you get in this, you know, rugby, which is all about power, where, you know, you bring on your biggest guys, you almost get a, not necessarily rugby league style thing, where these guys can sort of play for 10 minutes, then we have a scrum, we have five minutes rest, then we go again. So, you know, it's, I guess it's about how the game wants to be run, and that's not for me to say. That's for the powers that be to discuss that and how we move on. And it's great that, you know, every year potentially we get these trials and to try and better the game, and different sort of hemispheres trial these new trialist sort of laws and pick the ones which should benefit the game most. And, you know, we'll just see what happens in the future. But I don't think, is there something I would change or do? I don't think you can sort of answer that with, because it's not really my place to answer it.
No, that's fair enough. Like you mentioned about kind of new trials and laws, and I guess kind of the most recent one is just sort of the way that the breakdown's refereed, and sort of being a bit tighter on players rolling away and, you know, placing the ball and things like that. As a referee, is it tough to kind of change the mindset with how you referee that, and is it frustrating kind of having to blow up quite a bit in the first few games?
I don't think it's difficult because they're not that, because they're only interpretations. There's no change to the actual law. They're not saying this is a new law. It's just interpreting. It's almost kind of going, well, listen, we need to probably go a little bit harder here, which again, you probably saw in the Southern Hemisphere and at the start when we did it, that we blew a few more penalties. But what you found over the last three or four games is players are adapting, referees are adapting. You have that settling in period. And then we get, I think there was a lot of analysis today on ruck speed, how the ruck speed's increased from these new interpretations, which we want. We want, you know, everybody wants as fans, coaches, players, quicker ball, because we get more ball in play time and a better game of rugby. So I think it's, you know, as we've seen, it's worked really well, and all it's taken is players and referees to adapt to make the game better, which is ultimately what we want.
Carl, you know, we've got probably every seven in every top team at the moment is an exponent, and the sixes and the eights are joining in as well. But I guess one of your jobs is to predict what might happen and be there when it does happen, and you can adjudicate what's gone on legally or otherwise. But you must see sometimes when somebody goes to ground, they get tackled and the supporters aren't quite there, and you get a Tom Curry or a Ben Curry or a Ben Earl, and they're straight in over it, and you're thinking, that's going to be a penalty. And then the massive clear out comes in, and it just becomes grey, doesn't it? The whole thing becomes grey.
Well, that's where they've kind of changed it now. So it used to be, I think you used to hear the phrase quite a lot last season, was you got to survive the clear out.
Yes, yes.
But we don't have that this year. It's if you're, as you mentioned, Tom Curry, Ben Earl are over the ball. If they're over the ball legally and the tackler is out the way and not impeding the clearers and has clearly shown a clear lift of the ball and is trying to take it, and the clearers come in and then they clear him off it, then rather than last year we would probably play on, this year we're rewarding that. And that doesn't mean just a quick lift, come on, reward me, or we'd be blowing more and more penalties, but just showing as they're in a good, strong position, they're trying to take the ball, and that clear out has come a little bit too late and not cleared him, and he's almost fallen back with the ball or taken it with him. And that's kind of what we wanted to get away from, the safety aspect of one guy over the ball, potentially in a vulnerable position, and people, you know, two 20-stone blokes coming to clear him out. So that's why, you know, now you're getting the quicker whistle with the whole non-penalties for the safety aspect of it, and to sort of make the, you know, players in the competition a little bit better.
And one of the things that Looseheads have been doing, Carl, over the lockdown period and into the restart of the season, is they promote the hashtag Enough campaign. Obviously, you would have seen it all over social media. One of the things that BT Sport did really well a couple of weeks ago, they had Emily Starrett talking about it, and obviously Sarah Cox, your colleague, was highlighting about how much, you know, she's now been involved in these Premiership games. I mean, for you as a referees union, is that brilliant to see Sarah getting those opportunities? Because I know she did a lot of stuff in the National Leagues, and she's probably gone the same route as you, built up that experience, and she's now getting the exposure she deserves.
No, I think it's fantastic. You want, you know, you see the women's rugby game in general is developing and moving forward, which is great. And I think it's the same with the referees as well. You want the best girls, guys, whatever, coming through the game. And, you know, they're showing, which she clearly is, that she's talented enough to referee and officiate at that level. I think it's a great opportunity, and just shows that it doesn't matter who you are, what you are, that you can still perform and, you know, at that level, which is great. And I think it's all about the opportunities people can get. And you've seen Sarah's had a few opportunities and taken them, and I think it's fantastic for her. And we want to see more women and men in the game refereeing and playing. So,
and do you think that shows kind of the rugby values as well, Carl? Because we always talk about the rugby values and it being such an inclusive sport, and it just, you know, we always talk about it. We love the game, all five of us sat on this podcast, but there is work that still needs to be done, doesn't there, to make that all-encompassing sport that we love.
I don't think in any sport you're going to ever have, the perfect sport. There's always going to be things that you're looking to develop, looking to prove. And I think that's the beauty of sport. You're always trying to make it better. If you stood still and not looking to move forward, I think that's where, you know, the game could potentially go backwards. And I don't think any sport does that. And rugby certainly doesn't do it, you know, with, you see the England women's team, they're getting contracts. that, you know, stuff like that. They're always trying to move the game forward, which I think is great. And, you know, we're always looking to, you know, as I mentioned, the trials, new trials to make the game better. So I think as rugby, as any sport, we're always trying to improve and seeing what developments they can use to improve the game and, you know, improve the inclusiveness of the sport as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And probably by 2023, Carl, we would have made some really good steps forward where we do see some female officials at the next World Cup. And just on the World Cups, just to, before we go on to your Mars 15, you were obviously in Japan. You would have been there a year ago today. Looking forward to that first game between Japan and Russia. I mean, what was that experience like for you? Because I guess all the hard work from when you started your qualifications, if you like, from 2014 was maybe probably leading up to that point, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it was a massive sort of surprise for me to even be going to the World Cup literally 2 years after sort of retiring from playing. But, you know, when you had that experience, I think, I guess, leading up to it, it was great. We had like a 3-day training camp in Japan. And then I was very fortunate to sort of travel to South Africa and Argentina and places like that to be involved in like the rugby championship and warm-up game. So that sort of was before that. But then going out there, I mean, I'd always wanted to go to Japan. And to get the opportunity to go out there with doing the job that you enjoy was amazing. I mean, the Japanese culture, the experience out there was second to none. I mean, speaking to guys who'd been to numerous World Cups, they were like, you know, this is one of the best experiences they'd had. So just to be part of that was amazing. And, you know, the people out there really embraced it. You know, you saw people from Japan wearing every country's, you know, shirt that one guy painted the shirts on him. So, you know, it was great. And for me, being out there for 6 weeks and experiencing that was, I mean, you know, I could sit here and try and describe it in words. I just don't think I could do it any justice. It was just amazing. And, you know, hopefully in 3 years time now, you know, I'll be doing it again in France. So, but yeah, it was probably as a referee, the pinnacle of your career. And, you know, I was very fortunate to get that so early in my referee career.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, Carl. Well, the World Cup is the pinnacle of the sport, but as we are slowly realising that the Mars 15 and taking on the Martians probably rivals it, Carl. So normally Mark hosts this section of podcast, so I'll hand it over to Mark for this bit.
Yeah, maybe you should rename it the Venus away game, because there's life on Venus, we now know. However, Carl Dixon is gamekeeper turned poacher, I think. Maybe poacher turned gamekeeper. But your combined Mars 15 of any era, any gender, any age, player or referee, is going to be one to savour, I think.
Well, I can safely say there's no referees in the 15, I can tell you that.
You haven't put yourself in at scrum half, then?
No, I haven't put myself in at scrum half, you know.
So, without further ado, off we go.
Okay, so I'm going to be, certain things aren't going to be well-known players, but I'm looking at the tourist aspect as well as the playing aspect. So I've got my loose head as Matt Volland, used to play with me at Bedford. I've been to on holiday with him many times. One of the greatest tourists you're going to get and could do a job. Used to play at Northampton as well, so could do a job. Number two, hooker, Sean Fitzpatrick. I mean, yeah. I don't think I really need to say too much there. You know, one of the greatest All Blacks ever. And you know what, I look at all these old boys and think to myself, well, I reckon they knew how to tour. So, you know, you hear some of the stories, I reckon they know how to go. And again, similarly at tight head, Carl Heyman, I think he sort of changed the game when he became a tight head. He, you know, one of these guys was 6'4", you know, nearly 18 to 20 stone guy, was unbelievable. John Eales, one of the second rows. Again, you know, for his era, probably, you know, second to none in that sort of game, and could kick. So, you know, you don't get many of them. Number five, again, purely, probably not well known, guy called John Phillips, great tourist, and had some fantastic party tricks, which I won't go into.
Please, go on.
But it was fantastic. Number six, Skolt Berger, I think in his heyday, you know, again, second to none, one of the most attritional players you're going to meet. You know, had no sort of, didn't matter what happened to his body, he'd just get in there. Number seven, again, a very close friend of mine, purely for the tourist aspect, been on many trips away, a guy called Sasha Harding at Bedford. My number eight, purely because I would not want to go anywhere near him, would be Henry Tuilagi. Yeah. Him breaking off a scrum is not my idea of fun as a nine. My number nine, I think one of the greats, Joost van der Westhuizen.
Yes.
One of the best of his era. I think one of the best nines ever. Number 10, very fortunate to play with him. A guy called Nick Evans. You know, one of the best players I ever played with. And you know, actually, he could, even though he had horrific dress sense, he could do a night out. Number 11, again, generational, David Campese. You know, one of the best wingers of his generation. And again, I've gone for these older guys because, you know, you hear the stories from what it used to be in the amateur days. So I think they'd be good guys. Number 12, don't know him very well, but again, I think he'd be a good tourist, and he was a good player, Scott Gibbs.
Yes.
Big bowling ball, 12. Number 13, Tim Horan. Again, I think he was a fantastic player. Number 14, Jonah Lomu. Again, probably the prototype winger from back then, and now you see more of his sort of prototype size wingers, but he was the, I know, you know, at that time was just, you know, one of a kind and unbelievable. And then again, purely for tourist, he is a 10, but he has played 15. A guy called Ben Boteker, who's down at now, but had a great was a great tourist, and he could you know, definitely have a three day drinking session with no problem. My manager, I would have as Tiger Woods, because I'd love to sit down with him. I know we can party. I'd love to discuss a few of his stories, what he's done, etc. I think that would be fascinating. My coach, Jurgen Klopp.
Wow, brilliant.
You're on the right podcast, Carl. You're on the right podcast. Jurgen
Klopp, you know, you see, I mean, again, don't know him, but you see how he is, you know, when he does interviews and stuff. I just think he'd be a fantastic sort of guy to sit next to and pick his brain. Yeah. Water boy, I've actually gone for the referees, Luke Pearce, because I know he was a water boy going through his schoolboy era of playing. He was a first class water boy, so I've gone for Luke Pearce. And then my kit man, this is quite controversial. I don't think he'd appreciate me giving him the kit opportunity, but I'd go for Tyson, Mike Tyson. Again, just purely because I was like, can I have a manager? I'm like, well, I don't think he can be a manager, but I think if you put him in the back room and just sort of went in there and had a chat with him every now and again, I think, again, it'd just be a fascinating guy to have a conversation with it and could tell you a few things. So, and I think it'd be great on a night out.
Yes.
No one would mess with you whatsoever, so.
Starring in The Hangover, he would be a good
guy. Exactly. You know, you could get him on stage having a bit of a dance.
As a special dispensation, I think we should allow you to select your dream refereeing team.
Oh, dream refereeing team. That wasn't on the list. Like.
No, so I think it should be the ref himself who leads the pack, but the two ARs and the TMO as well.
Okay, I think referee. I think I'd go for Tony Spreadbury purely on the basis that, I mean, I've had him referee me in the charity game, and I just think it'd be. I don't think you could get angry at him. I just don't think you could get angry about anything. He'd just be able to, you know, talk his way through anything. ARs. Oh, I'd go for Brian Campbell, old school referee.
Yeah.
But again, I think just because of the sort of northern, no nonsense, quite funny factor. I'd probably have Barnsley as a TMO. As you've seen, he's just taken over the TMO. He's a unique TMO. He likes to talk quite a bit. you know, at the end of the day, if you're unsure on a decision, just go, come on, Barnsley, what do you think? And if you give the answer, so you'd be happy days. And then the other AR, oh, that'd be an interesting one. Do you know what? I'd go for Sarah Cox just because a little
Brilliant.
Bit different. There you go.
Brilliant. Nice.
I'd include her.
In your 15, there's some big hitters there. Who would skipper the team?
So the skipper, wow, I mean, you can't look further than, you know, Sean Fitzpatrick, can you really? Yeah. You know, most capped skipper for New Zealand. So, and the most successful captain, well, one of the most successful captains. So, yeah, I mean, we've had the privilege of talking to him, with him being on the board and everything at Quinn. So, I think from his era, coming forward, I think, you know, you couldn't look any further than him.
Yeah. Fair play. Nice 15. Nice balance.
You'd like to give Henry Tuilagi the captaincy, because I don't think anyone's going to say much to him, but I don't think he'd talk to you much. He might just show you a lot.
Well, Sean Fitzpatrick is a fan of the Mars 15, Carl, and we're not just saying that. He got in touch with the guys during lockdown and was very pleased with some of our choices, so I'm sure he's going to be pleased with that team.
Good, I'm happy. I hope you will be. I hope you're confident
on it. Just a couple. Known place for Ugo Monyo or Joe Marler on the trip?
Well, the thing is with Ugo, we wouldn't know if he was fit till Thursday, and then if it was raining but it wasn't on TV, he might not play. So I can't go with Ugo. That's the issue with Ugo. So no, I just can't put him in there. Maybe he can be my special dispensation as a commentator for the game. Okay. I can use him as a commentator. And then you can stick Joe Marler in there as the commentator as well, as a factor.
And just one final thing, Carl. The Martians obviously taking on a Mars 15 is a big test for them. But if you were going to show them one game of rugby, would it be that semi-final against Northampton and a certain Mr. Lee Dixon as well?
Yeah, I think that, you know, when you're looking back at certain things, that's probably, you know, it made it extra special that, you know, I played the whole 80 minutes and when we got to the final. But I think it was extra special that it was against my brother with 10 minutes to go. I was thinking, oh, no, here we go. I'm going to lose to my brother in a semi-final of a Premiership competition. And that driving mall sorted us out and in the end and got us through. So I think that was probably, yeah, one of the highlights of my career.
Still any gloating around the Christmas dinner table?
Yeah, there's only the only issue you have is when you can sit there and go, how many England caps you get? And I'm like, all right, you beat me there, pal. I can't really so, you know, there you go.
Brilliant. Well, Carl, it's been fantastic to chat to you this afternoon, and obviously it's been such a busy time with you with covering the Premiership games at the moment, so we really appreciate you taking the time to speak to us.
That's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And that's been another episode of the Loose Heads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union. Thanks for listening.